Krishna has just walked through Mathura, the big city, after going there from the village of Vrindavan. And there he was, dressed like a village boy. Are you back yet? He's just dressed like a village boy, and there he was in the big city. So who is the first person he's going to see? It's what is called in the Sanskrit word is a rajakam, a rajak. He washes washermen, or in Vrindavan they call them dobis. But he wasn't exactly washerman, he was Rangakaram, he did also. Ranga means colors. So he dyed the clothes also. But he was also a servant of King Kamsa's. And because he was a servant of the king, he was very arrogant. And interestingly enough, a dobi or a washerman is considered one of the really lower occupations, and it's inauspicious to even see one, considered inauspicious to even see a dobi first thing in the morning with his washcloth. But yet he was still so arrogant. So anyway, he had all this dyed cloth, and he was actually going to sell it. I think Srila Jiva Goswami describes this point. But he's going to lie. But he was actually going to sell it. He's going to say, oh, this is the king's cloth and you're asking for it. So anyway, Krishna wanted proper fancy clothing because Krishna is, he's so well dressed. He dresses himself in very fashionable ways, and Krishna dresses himself in not conservative ways either, with bright colors and wearing his turbans, fancy turbans, and tilted to the side and like this. He's the original cool teenager. It's true. So he would dress in wonderful ways, and he was in the city, so he wanted to dress himself up. So he saw this rajak. Rajak means what?
Washerman.
Rajak, they have the same word in Hindi, do you know? And you also know washing machine, mostly, yes? Rajakam kanchid ayantam, that a washerman approached who was Rajak Rangakaram. Gadagraja, he approached Lord Krishna, the elder brother of Gada, and he was also engaged in dyeing cloth. Drishva ayachata vashamsi, upon seeing him, ayachata vashamsi, he requested him for some clean clothing, dotani, clean clothing, ati uttamani, first class clean clothing. He requested him for this. Seeing a washerman approaching who had been dyeing some cloths, Krishna asked him for the finest laundered garments he had. And this is what he said. Dehi avaya samuchitani. Dehi means it's very respectful. He said, please give Avayo, the two of us. He was with, who was he with? Does anyone remember from yesterday? Who was Krishna walking with? Balaram? Just Krishna Balaram? Huh? Cowherd boys. And were parents there? No, everyone remembers that. I mean, what kind of fun would they have had? So, very respectfully, actually, he said, Dehi avayo samuchitani angavasham sitarhato. Please give my dear, angav actually is my dear, he was said it with great affection, my dear washerman, please give to us two, who are very deserving, some clothes. And if you do so, bhavishyati, in the future, param shreyo, you will get the supreme benefit. Datus te natra samsaya. And there is no, for the giver, the datta. Datu means for one who gives, and datta means one who is charitable. So for one who gives, you receive the greatest benefit, and of this there is no doubt. Natra samsaya. In this matter, there shouldn't be any doubt. Very respectfully. And now, he was with the coward boys, and he just asked for some suitable garments, just for himself and Balaram, not for everyone. And he asked in a very respectful way, and an affectionate way, called them Anga, my dear, please give, but please give us some first-class things. Now the washerman was demonic, he was arrogant, and he was soon to end his life, actually. Because Krishna asked in such a gentle, polite way, and the washerman, in 1:35-36, two verses, he's going to reply in very, very discordant and harsh words. So, verse 34 says, thus requested by the Supreme Lord, Paripurnena, who is absolutely complete, he doesn't need anything. Sarvatai is absolutely complete in all respects. Sa akshetam Rushita, insultingly and with anger. Prahi, he spoke this Britya Rajna, the servant of the king, and Sudhormada, he was very falsely proud. And he spoke in such an insulting, angry way to the Supreme Lord after being requested so politely. So the washerman said, Idrisani, this sort of Eva Vashamsi, this sort of garments, Nityam, is not suitable for people who Giri, Vane, who Chara, those who move around on the mountains and in the forests. You're just village boys. Look at these clothes. These are city clothes. These are meant for the king. And who are you? You're used to wandering around in your ripped garments or whatever in the hills and the mountains and the villages and the fields. Paridatta, kim uvritta. This is very impudent. Thinking that a person like you deserves to put on these things that are Raja Dravyani. These are the Dravya means the, I can't think of the proper English word, the ingredients or just the things that are Raja, huh?
Accessories? No.
No, not accessories. It means like the materials of the things, like the Yeah. Anyway, these things, these are Rajas of Jnani. These are the kings. Adipasta. And you want them? Now, Krishna spoke very gently to him, very politely, and even affectionately, calling him Anga. And he replied in an arrogant way, and Srila Jiva Goswami says he wasn't even telling the truth. These weren't exactly the king's garments, but rather, they were the clothes that he had dyed himself, and he was going to sell them. But he wanted to just immediately chastise Krishna in such a horrible way. These are Rajajasya. These are the things that are of the kings. And you think that you're a suitable person to wear them? You who wander around Girivane Chara, you are wandering around the mountainsides and the forests. You are very impudent to even think. Yeah, the word udrita. You are impudent to think that the king's clothes, that which is meant for the king, is suitable for you, you village boy. So here's a translation. You impudent boys. You're accustomed to roaming the mountains and the forest, and yet you would dare put on such clothes as these? These are the king's possessions that you're asking for. And then, yata, ashu, balis, go quickly, fool, you fools, ma evam pratyam. Pratyam means don't appeal, or don't beg in this way, you fools. Jadi jivasya, if you desire to live, to stay alive, badnanti, grinanti, lampanti, driptam, rajakulani vai. You are so foolish that you're asking, you're begging for things that are the king's. If you want to stay alive, don't do these things, because the king's men will arrest someone like you. And badnanti, if you desire to live, jivisa, if you desire to live, you shouldn't do these things, because the king's men, Rajakulani, the king's people, indeed, certainly, they will come. And this is what they will do to you. Badnanti, they will bind you up. They will tie you up. Gunanti, they will kill you. Lampanti, and then they will loot all your possessions from your home. What do you think? What do you think? You ever meet someone like this? Really? Poor boy. No one knows what you have to go through in life. How difficult it must be for you. One day you can tell us all about it. But come. I'll be there. I mean, if he wanted to say no, because Krishna didn't speak harshly or roughly to him, he spoke affectionately. What could he have said, no, in a polite way, in a sweet way? What could he have said?
He could have said it's not his decision to make, but it's actually the king's.
It's the king's cloth. If I give you the cloth, I'm going to get myself in trouble, my dear beautiful boy. I'd like to give it to you, but the king will be so angry, he might even tie me up and loot my house and kill me or something like that. So I'd like him to, but I'm actually afraid. Please forgive me. He could have replied in kind, or he could have said, you know, there's so many things he could have said sweetly, and still said no. But look how he replied. Such arrogance. So Krishna did naturally what he would do in that circumstance. As the washerman thus spoke brazenly, the son of Devaki became angry. And then the words used here is very interesting. Kara agrena, just with the front of his hand or with his fingertips. He basically touched his head with his fingertips and cut his head off. What do you think of that? Decisive action. What do you think of that?
Must have the long nails.
He doesn't need long nails, that's the point.
He's all powerful.
He's all powerful, every little part of his body. And still the washerman was actually benefited.
Yeah.
Because he was sent home. Because a person who was so angry and so envious and so proud, his life is one of suffering.
Mm.
There's a saying, they say this about some of the South Americans, they say, if you could buy him for what he is worth and sell him for what he thinks he's worth, you'd make a big profit. That's a South American saying. Because after all, he was just a dobe, a washerman. And there he was. And everyone knew, he knew that Krishna was from Vrindavan. He knew that Krishna was the son of Vasudeva. He knew he was royalty. And he himself was the washerman. What arrogance. And Krishna decided, you will die now. He became angry at him. And just with the tips of his fingers, cut off his head. What do you think of that? What do you think?
It's quite wondrous.
Yes, quite wondrous. What do you wonder about? You mean wondrous in the sense of amazing?
Yeah.
What else do you think?
It's decisive.
Yes, what else do you think?
Brutal.
Brutal. What else do you think? You see the good in everything.
Getting straight to the point.
Krishna is independent too. He acts as he wishes to act. Because we could say, Krishna, some of us might say, yeah, this man should have been killed. Some of us might think, this is quite an extreme reaction from Krishna. Because it's one thing, like we were hearing yesterday, that when the ladies of Mathura, when they saw Krishna, some of them, they were holding their babies even, and they just took their babies and put them down. They didn't care about whether they were, didn't care about anything. They just ran to see Krishna. So we could think, how wonderful and powerful love for Krishna is. But then when you think that it's your baby or something like that, if you're thinking like that, then you think, wow, that's really heavy. And there's no fault on their part, actually. It is considered actually most glorious. But when you stop thinking of it as a story, but start thinking of it as something that actually happened, it's very, very heavy. So Krishna reacted in this way. Is it appropriate or not appropriate?
He's not under those guidelines.
What do you mean by that?
He's independent of the modes of decorum.
And he's param satyam. He's all good.
Yeah.
That means everything he does is perfect. Auspicious and perfect too. And he's not under the morality and good and bad is meant for us lesser beings who are to govern our behavior, we who are under the modes of material nature. Because if we act in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion, we will be degraded and we'll go down. And if we act with piety in sattva-gun and goodness, we'll be elevated. But Krishna is not under any of the modes of material nature, neither passion or goodness or ignorance. So, and there's no question of him being elevated because he's already elevated. He's the topmost person and he's transcendental and he's fully spiritual. What's he going to be elevated to? What is he going to be elevated from to? He's always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he cannot be judged. The Supreme Lord cannot be judged by the same methodology by which we judge a proper and improper, a good or a bad action within this world. This is what it means to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what do you think about that? Well, it sounds like he can do whatever he wants. Is it okay? Well, yes. Well, that is. He can do whatever he wants. And not only is it okay, but it's perfect. Because what is motivating him to act is not what is motivates us to act. What motivates us to act is the mode of material nature, basically, and our lack of something. But Krishna doesn't lack anything. So Krishna became angry at the washerman. So does that mean he was insulted? And anger is in which mode of material nature? Rajaguno samudva kama esha krodha esha rajaguno samudva mahashano mahapapma. So kama esha krodha esha. So krodha, anger, rajaguno, it's said to be come from, Krishna says it comes from, and it's from the mode of passion, and then it degrades quickly into ignorance. And then mahashano mahapapma is the greatest sin. But it's not when Krishna does it. That's for those who are under the modes of material nature. But usually, Krishna follows the laws of this world to set an example. What verse of the Bhagavad Gita? A good example of what we should follow. What verse of the Bhagavad Gita? Number. Yes. So yad pramanam. This is the pramana. This is the justification for action, or the proof, or the standard of action for everyone else. And if I don't follow the standards, but Krishna is beyond the standards. So this is also spoken of in the 33rd chapter of the 10th canto, where the Rasa Lila is discussed, where Krishna is dancing with the wives of others. And this actually, when I was in Bangladesh, were you there? You were there that day
mm-hmm.
when those Christians came to the temple to talk to us. One of the young man was quite, actually he's quite arrogant, and he said, how could you worship a god who dances with the wives of others in the middle of the night, and he gets to have all that fun and I can't do it? but this is taking the material consciousness and material right and wrong and saying that God has to do that, even though obviously he's the giver of the laws. So it's not an understanding of who God is. No understanding. So therefore these very intimate pastimes of Krishna, even this one, is really not for people who have not yet studied the first nine cantos of the Bhagavatam, because it must confuse. It must confuse until you understand who God is, you won't be able to understand the rightness of all his activities, regardless of what they appear from our point of view. One devotee, he was talking to some Christian nun, and Catholic nun, and she said, "You say that God has so many wives, and you know that's not proper." And he replied, "The Christian system is that the nuns, in some orders, they think of themselves as Jesus' wife, and they wear even a wedding ring." So he said, "How many wives does Jesus have?" and he wasn't married. And he said, "Then how come you all think of him as your as your husband?" Hey, whose ring is that? It's pretty good. And Prabhupada was really good at answering things. I was listening to one, Memories of Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada, he used to brush his teeth until he was quite old. He used to brush his teeth with a twig. And what you do is you get a twig, and it's supposed to be this thickness, and you can, this is how people brush their teeth off, and it's especially good to use a neem twig. Because it has the antiseptic properties, and you bite it, make it very soft like a brush, and then you clean the gums and everything very, very carefully. So when Prabhupada used to sometimes have the devotees, when he would go on his morning walk, take a twig from one of the trees, if he'd go to a park or something like that, and bring it back for him. So he was in England, And he was on the morning walk, and one of the brahmacharis went out to cut a twig from the tree. And the park attendant came running after him and said, "You can't," you know, and he came running to Prabhupada, and the park attendant came running very righteously in British bureaucracy and said, "You can't take that twig from the park." And Prabhupada looked at him and said, "You British have stolen the wealth from all over the world, and you can't even spare a twig from a tree." And he went, "Hmm?" Prabhupada, he couldn't be intimidated by these people. You can't even spare us the twig from a tree.
He didn't reply, he just walked away.
So Prabhupada was much more liberal than Krishna. As the washerman thus spoke harshly, brazenly, the son of Devaki became angry, and he knew that he was royalty too, and still he spoke in this way. And then Krishna, merely with his fingertips, he separated the man's head from his body. And the washerman's assistants all dropped their bundles of clothes and fled down the road, scattering in all directions, because they were thinking, "He gets angry, and look what he can do, I think. We better all take care of ourselves." So they dropped everything because they thought that, "Oh, Krishna wants clothes. And if we carry away the clothes, who knows what he's going to do to us?" So they scattered in all directions. And then Krishna took the clothes. So how much did Krishna take? He took one dhoti, one chadar, just Krishna and Balaram put on pairs of garments that especially pleased them. They just took what they want. They didn't take enough for tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. They didn't loot. They didn't plunder. They just took what they needed for their purposes. And then Krishna, he gave one pair to Balaram, one set of clothes for him. And then Krishna distributed the remaining clothes amongst the cowherd boys. Everyone took what they wanted, leaving some scattered on the ground. They just, whatever was left over was just there. And at this time, remember, Krishna was walking through Mathura, walking through the city, and there were people showering him with flower petals, and the Brahmins were praising him and blessing him and offering him auspicious items. At every turn, he was being worshipped. There were hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people, and then the washerman. This was the triumphant return of the son of Vasudev. Everyone knew that this is the son of Vasudev, royalty, who was coming, and the washerman. And they all just watched this happen. And they were doing this. All the people were worshipping Krishna fearlessly in Kamsa's place, because Krishna, just by his presence, they had so much strength to go against what would please Kamsa, even though Kamsa was acting so heinously, so terribly. So then, what happens next? So Krishna, he has his cloth, and then tatas tu vayakas pritas tayaveshnam akalpanat vichitra varnais chai layar al akalpa anurupataha. Then a weaver came. A weaver came forward. And usually we translate it as a tailor. Vayaka. How do you say tailor in Hindi?
Tailor.
How do you say, do you know? Okay. Are there tailors in Australia?
Yes.
Not so many though. Everything is ready made. So the weaver came forward, because Krishna was holding these garments, and the tailor, the weaver immediately came forward and, feeling affectionate for the lords, nicely adorned their attire with cloth ornaments of various colors. So purport. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that the weaver adorned the lord with cloth armlets and earrings that looked just like jewels. The word anarupataha means the colors match nicely. So Krishna, now, after seeing this weaver who immediately came forward out of his affection, and Krishna was so pleased by him, so he had wonderful colored garments, kingly garments of wonderful colors. And Krishna is one of the characteristics of Krishna, one of his qualities is that he's a wonderful dresser. He dresses in a wonderful way, like a dramatic actor upon the stage. And so he had beautiful garments on, dhoti kurta, and then he had armlets on that looked like jewels. And then, text 41, and everything was very color coordinated and matched perfectly. And Krishna and Balaram looked resplendent, each in his own unique, wonderfully ornamented outfit. So what color is Krishna especially fond of for his dhoti?
Yellow.
Yellow. And Balaram? Yeah. Why does Krishna wear yellow? Yes. And why does Balaram wear blue? Are there any pictures of Krishna and Balaram? No. But there, in Gaur and Nitai, Krishna and Balaram. And also Srimati Radharani wears what color? Because? we might. So they resemble Krishna Balaram, looking very, very finely dressed and effulgent and so beautiful. And Krishna doesn't need any garments to make him look beautiful because he's so beautiful. And when you can see this when, especially with Didi outfits or something like that, sometimes you see there's jewelry, there's colors and things. They sort of look nice. But when Krishna is wearing them, when the deity is wearing them, when Sarvasundha or Srimati Radharani or Gopinath are wearing the clothes, they look resplendently, exquisitely beautiful, extra beautiful. So is it that the, I remember one time I saw when they were bathing Tota Gopinath in Jagannath Puri. They used to allow us to sit there and watch. And after they would bathe him, they would dry him, and then they would decorate him. And when he didn't have any decorations at all, he looked so beautiful and strong and exquisite. And then they would decorate him with a chandan and paint different designs on his cheeks and his forehead and around his eyes, and then they would paint his beautiful strong arms, and he looked so beautiful. And then with each layer of clothing they put on him, a turban, a chadar, a dhoti, he looked so beautiful. But none of the different stages of his dressing were more beautiful than the others. But actually the simple cloth, when it was decorating Krishna, looked beautiful. Otherwise it was simple cloth, it was only cloth. But when Krishna, that same cloth was used around Krishna, his beauty was so, the cloth was beautiful, that's what we say. But Krishna is beautiful in every stage. So Krishna, so Bhushana Bhushanangam, he beautifies, he is the ornament of the ornament. He makes the ornaments look beautiful. So Krishna and Balaram look resplendent, each in his own unique, wonderfully ornamented outfit. They resembled a pair of young elephants, one white, the other black, decorated for a festive occasion. And pleased with the weaver, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tasya Prasanna Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord was pleased with him, and he blessed him, that after death he would achieve the liberation of attaining a form like the Lord's, and that while in this world he would enjoy supreme opulence, physical strength, influence, memory, and sensory vigor. Okay, who can remember some of those things, those blessings?
Opulence, memory, and sensory vigor.
Yes, very good. Memory, sensory vigor, supreme opulence. Listen to what he blessed him. He gave Krishna some ornaments that looked like jewels. They weren't jewels, but they looked like jewels. And Krishna gave him that he would enjoy supreme opulence. Physical strength. Influence, memory, and sensory vigor. His eyes would not weaken, his hearing would not weaken, his sense of smell and touch and taste would not weaken. He didn't ask for these things even, but Krishna naturally awarded him. And actually he had promised the Rajak that if you just please give us these clothes, some nice clothes, fine clothes, then without a doubt, if you grant us this charity, if without a doubt you will receive the greatest benefits. And the washerman reacted in such an inimical, envious way that he actually received the greatest benefit. Okay, killed by Krishna, but externally he just He was just killed. He was just killed. He wouldn't do as Krishna wanted. And what happened to the clothes anyway? Krishna took what he wanted. The coward boys took what they wanted. He didn't even ask, when he asked the washerman, he didn't ask for anything for the coward boys even, because there were many, many coward boys. He just asked for him and Balaram. But they ended up losing everything. So if we don't give to Krishna willingly, really we lose everything. Time, like Krishna's fingertips, the chakra of time, will sever our life from our body. This is inevitable. It's happened to everyone. Then the two lords went to the house of a garland maker, and his name was, does anyone know?
Siddhama.
Siddhama, yes. What chapter is this? Yes, you do. Yes, you do. What chapter? Krishna enters Mathura.
41?
Yes. The two lords then went to the house of the garland maker, Sudama. And when Sudama saw them, he at once stood up and then bowed down and he placed his head on the ground. After offering them seats and bathing their feet, so he's going to get more attention and more explanation than even the weaver. Sudama then worshipped them and their companions with argya, garlands, pan, sandalwood paste, and other presentations, just to make Krishna comfortable. And Sudama said, because everyone actually knew that he was, first of all, they knew at least that he was Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva, and that he was so famous and so powerful. And he said, and he knew that he was actually the Supreme Lord. Akura knew that he was the Supreme Lord. And Sudama knew he was the Supreme Lord. And he said, O Lord, my birth is now sanctified and my family free of contamination. Now that you both have come here, my forefathers, the demigods, and the great sages are certainly all satisfied with me. Of course, that's more or less the same thing. But this is the perfection. Because people perform sacrifices and they perform activities to satisfy others. But if they get the blessings of Krishna, then everyone is automatically satisfied. You two lords are the ultimate cause of this entire universe. So he knew he was the Supreme Lord. To bestow sustenance and prosperity upon this realm, you have descended with your plenary expansions. And because you are the well-wishing friends and super soul of the whole universe, you regard all with unbiased vision. Now this is so important at this point, because it appears externally that Krishna was biased, that he rewarded the washerman with death, and he rewarded the weaver who was kind to him. He rewarded him with so many wonderful benedictions. Is this a partiality on Krishna's part? I like everyone who's nice to me, and everyone who's not nice to me, I cause so much trouble to. But no, he regards all with unbiased vision. Therefore, although you reciprocate your devotees' loving worship, you always remain equally disposed towards all living beings. So Krishna is always kind to everyone. Everything he does to everyone results in the benefit of that person. What do you think about that? I mean, we hear it in a philosophical way and we think it's very wonderful and Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. But what do you think about that when you apply that point to your own consciousness? You reciprocate your devotees' loving worship, you always remain equally disposed towards all living beings. And this means yayatam mam prapadyante, that how if you approach Krishna with enmity, he's going to reciprocate. You always remain equally disposed towards all living beings. But yet, because the reciprocation is with Krishna, good will come from it. Good must come from every interaction with Krishna. As Prabhupada once said, even he said, saying Hare Krishna is bad is good. Just by the mere mention of Krishna's name, even if you say it in a derogatory way. But just saying it. So then he said, the garland said, please order me, your servant, to do whatever you wish. To be engaged by you in some service is certainly a great blessing for anyone. So here's the purport on this, that it is the greatest fortune actually to be engaged in Krishna's service. And especially if the service is done with devotion, is done with love. To do service for Krishna is the greatest fortune. Krishna is equal to everyone. But he's especially dear, or he's especially kind. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maya tatesa chapyaham. He's especially cares for his devotees who especially care for him. So the devotee is thinking in this way, please let me serve you. Let me do whatever you wish. To be engaged by you in some service is certainly a great blessing for anyone. And Sukadeva continued, O best of kings, having spoken these words, Sudama could understand what Krishna Balaram wanted, and thus with great pleasure he presented them with garlands of fresh, fragrant flowers without being asked. He knew what they wanted. And beautifully adorned with these flower garlands, Krishna and Balaram were delighted, and so were their companions. The two lords then offered the surrendered Sudama, who was bowing down before them, whatever benedictions he desired. So we're seeing so many things, how Krishna's reciprocating differently with the people of Mathura. And we're seeing how the Sudama, who's so surrendered to Krishna, and just surrendered means just his mood. I want to serve. How can I serve you? Please order me. Please tell me what I can do to please you. Thinking that to do some service for you, O Lord, is the greatest blessing. I have a body. I have a mind. I have arms. I have legs. I have intelligence. I have whatever wealth, words, or I have just some water and a tulsi leaf. Whatever I have, if I can somehow use these things to serve you, then this is the greatest blessing upon me. That is the way that the devotee has. His interest is in service, not to gain anything from the service, not to serve for a purpose, but to serve because that is his natural position and the happiness of his heart. Is to give something to Krishna, to offer something to Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. This is what it means to be a devotee. Anya vilasita sanyam jana kamara navritam anakalena krishna nasyonam bhakti yutta. So he gave Krishna these flower garlands that were beautiful. Everyone was so happy. So look what Krishna has now. He has fine cloth. He has ornaments on his body. Because he's walking into the big city, and he's going to perform heroic pastimes. And now he has beautiful flower garlands, beautiful and fragrant flower garlands. And then what does he need to complete his decoration? But that we shall hear in the next chapter. But here, we'll close this chapter by hearing what Krishna wanted, what Krishna gave this person, Sudama. He said, bowing down, he bestowed upon whatever benediction he desired. So what did he desire? Now, if Krishna said to you, I will give you whatever you desire. First thing would be a 900cc Kawasaki motorcycle, obviously. And what would be the second desire? A helmet. Third desire. And we already went through the desires with all the water fountains in the college will have only 7-Up. And all the teachers, they will only know one letter of the alphabet, A, when they were marking your exams. Do they give A's or numbers?
They give numbers.
Oh, what numbers? Do they give 1 to 100?
1 to 100.
Yeah, and what do you usually get?
15.
Is that a high score, a medium score, or a low score? So what do you think he's going to ask for? It's quite astounding what he asked for, actually. What do you think he's going to ask for? Do you remember? He asked for, and I'll show you if we have it. Do you have the first canto there? No. What to do? No one has their mobile phone with the proper application on it.
Not in Krishna's book up there.
But this is the first canto of the Bhagavatam we need.
Right.
Huh? Let me just read what he... This is what he asked for. Of all things to ask for, this is what this very pure, unenvious soul who spontaneously brought Krishna into his house and just thinks that serving is the best benediction he could have, the opportunity to serve Krishna. This is what he asked for. Unshakable devotion to Krishna. Friendship with his devotees. And compassion for all living beings. Three things. Now, at this point, I will need first canto of the Bhagavatam. That has the 19th chapter. What were the three things? Do you remember?
Unshakable devotion.
Unshakable devotion.
Association with the devotees.
Friendship. For all living beings. How nice. Dayam param. Transcendental dayam. Mercy, compassion. So hardam bhuteshu. That means friendship towards all living beings. Excuse me, with the devotees, bhakteshu. Yeah. Bhaktim tasmin eva kilam padminis. So he asked for just three things. But interestingly enough, when Maharaj Parikit, right before his passing from this world, right before Sukadeva Goswami came, he was surrounded by Brahmins, and he spoke very sweetly to the Brahmins. And he said, he asked them for benedictions. Here Krishna said, what benediction do you want? And those three things were what the Brahmins had done. The Golden Maker asked for. But when Maharaj Parikit, when it was getting time for him to leave and he was surrounded by the Brahmins, this is what he asked for. O Brahmanas, just accept me as a completely surrendered soul. What does surrendered mean? How can I serve you? And let Mother Ganges, the representative of the Lord, also accept me in that way.
for I have already taken the lotus feet of the Lord into my heart. Let the snake bird or whatever magical thing the Brahmana created, let it bite me at once. I only desire that you all continue singing the deeds of Lord Vishnu. And now this is what he says. Again offering my obeisances unto you, Brahmanas. I pray that if I should again take my birth in the material world, I will have complete attachment to the unlimited Lord Krishna. Now I'm going to ask you after I read these to compare these to what Sudama is. I will have complete attachment to the unlimited Lord Krishna, association with his devotees, and friendly relations with all living beings. What do you think? Same. Comments? And then not only did Lord Krishna grant Sudama these benedictions, but he also awarded him strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity. Ever-increasing prosperity. That means however prosperous you are today, you are more prosperous tomorrow. What do you think about that? Good investment. Well, I figured he's got his black leather jacket on already. Oh, he wears the motorcycle. On the back, you should see what it says. Yes, it says nothing. It says just nothing. It says Narak Apsaras. Do you know what Narak Apsaras means? What does Naraka mean? And what is Apsaras?
Angels.
Yeah. Look at that face. He looks so innocent when he's like that, but actually.
Behind his back, you can tell everything. Somebody don't turn your back on him, you might be in trouble.
And he really can paint also. Sure. You know about his great painting skills? Yeah. And then after all this, Krishna and his elder brother took their leave. Okay. Krishna was really having fun as he was going through Mathura. Having a grand old time. Any questions or comments?
It almost sounds as though those qualities that they asked of Krishna were their characteristics in the Madhyamakari, except that they didn't, you know, want to avoid demons. That's a fourth characteristic.
But how would you ask what is the characteristic of an Uttama Bhagavata? Bhagavata doesn't want compassion. He doesn't have compassion because he sees everyone serving but him, serving Krishna but him. So how would you pray then for that? May please give me the vision to see everyone serving Krishna but me. But this is such humble, good prayers. That's, in other words, they're really based on service. Unshakable devotion. Friendship with the devotees. Good association. And compassion. To do good for others. It's something. I guess when you say that, it's madhyam. It's something that we can relate to in a practical way. Any other questions or comments?
When you hear Krishna doing something, that's like outside of the boundaries of any form of sort of etiquette or demeanor, then with the intelligence you can understand the history of looking at to do that. But still your mind reacts and responds in a particular way.
Yes. How does the mind respond, react and respond?
So like cutting off someone's head sounds drastic and heavy.
Right, so why does your mind respond?
What kind of person would do that?
Okay. So, and then keep going. He cut off someone's head, but he also rewarded the weaver in such a wonderful way, and Sudama in such a wonderful way. So how does your mind react to that? Yeah. And so he's really nice to those who lovingly serve him, and he's really heavy for those who are arrogant and obnoxious and who don't want to serve. So then how does your mind react to that? And then add to it, he's all powerful. So if you met a person who was all powerful, who was completely kind to those who serve him with devotion, just give him some flowers strung together. And if someone approaches him with arrogance and brazenness, it's very heavy with him. What do you think about how would you prefer to deal with that person? So that's another way to look at it. From the unless you want to lecture to him and tell him he shouldn't have acted that way. And then how are you acting? If you say, Krishna, you shouldn't act in that way, you shouldn't hurt people who are brazen and things, you should be kind to them.
Yeah.
And then more or less you're acting just like the washerman. Who do you think you are? You act like that. You're acting just like the washerman. It's not proper for you to act like that. So one's putting oneself in a very arrogant position and dangerous position.
Yeah.
A brazen position.
Well, what about just that, like, where you can understand, you're never gonna understand this person. Why your mind is reacting in that way?
Yeah. So continue the thought.
So that's like a lamentation that I'm never gonna be able to understand. Krishna in the mind automatically, immediately. Assess its activities from another perspective.
What's the basic difference between the two mentalities of the washerman and the florist, the garland maker?
Favorable and antagonistic.
I was thinking surrendered and unsurrendered. Mm-hmm. It's basically the same.
Yes.
So the surrendered soul, he understands Krishna's position and he can understand Krishna.
Yeah.
And the unsurrendered soul,
minimizes Krishna, doesn't understand Krishna. And he can't understand Krishna. But yet, Krishna's dealings to everyone benefit them.
Does this discomfort have something to do with yourself being in surrender?
Well, that's what we're saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. So what is, see, if you say that's pretty radical, Christian, that's pretty drastic. You kill this fellow, you know, of course he spoke badly. What happens if everyone started killing everyone who spoke badly to them, chopping off their heads? So you're telling Krishna that he shouldn't be doing what he's just done. So what did the washerman do? You shouldn't be acting like this. You basically have the same mood as the washerman. It's arrogant, it's brazen. And it's, and in the simplest way, it's false ego and unsurrendered. So then what do you do if you realize, and you pointed, that's a nice point, that if you have that mood, you can't understand Krishna. Krishna doesn't reveal himself. So then, as you pointed out, if we see that we do have this mood, we have so much to lament over, and we become humble and bring that lamentation into our chanting. And then Kirtaniya Sadahari.
The wisdom of the Buddha is when we experience something that's very difficult in our lives and we say, Krishna, why are you putting us through this? It's actually not knowing that everything Krishna does to us is for our good.
Well,
like Jesus Christ, when he went through what he went through, and he said, why are you doing this to me, my father? And then immediately he said, but this is your will. Is that the similar sort of...
Yeah. So what does it take? So what does it take to see Krishna's mercy in everything?
Understanding.
I was thinking faith.
Faith that whatever he does is for all good. So basically, if he does, I mean, everything he does for everyone is for their good.
Otherwise, if we don't have that, we'll always be in anxiety in this world.
So if he does everything for everyone, everything he does for everyone is for their good. The only difference between a devotee and one who doesn't know Krishna is that they just don't realize it's
not for their exactly.
Good.
Not exactly. It's like... It's Krishna describes this in the end of the in the ninth chapter, Samoham Sarvabhutesu Namedvesu Sthinabhya. For regular people, he's equal to, he's not favoring them, he's not acting unfavorably to them. He's just applying the law like a judge. So you could say that yes, that's also for the person's good, that if he's done something wrong, it's ultimately for his good that he gets punished. But it's not Krishna personally acting for that person. But when he's dealing with a devotee or an aspiring devotee even, it's quite different. He acts, he adjusts his life in such a way that it will be especially good for the person.
But then how do we, when one sees that the law is also Krishna's law, and because the law is Krishna's law, then there's no difference.
No, but there is a difference because Krishna's personal dispensation is there. Because when, at least in the United States, they have in the courts, they have a picture of, they always have a picture of this lady who's blind justice, and she, her eyes are blindfolded. And she's, and the scales of justice are going this way or that way, but that's how the law is applied. But for the devotees, it's not applied like that. Krishna's watching. One example is like when
Usa took Aniruddha into the private princess's quarters, and then and Aniruddha lived there for a long time, just living in the father's house with his unmarried daughter, and then the father comes in, and he's really upset.
She's pregnant.
He's really upset. Now, every father, it's a typical way a father would react, it's morally correct. But whose side did Krishna take? Did he take Vanasi? I can understand where you're coming from, Vanasi. Yes. No, he just immediately took the side of Aniruddha. He came in, basically, he didn't kill him, but he fought with him. He brought all his armies to protect Aniruddha, everything. Because Krishna deals with his beloveds in a different way. They're not under the laws. They don't take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
This is some pastime. Well, it's not the same. It's the same in the sense that everything ultimately comes from Krishna, but one is neutral and one is not neutral.
And personal touching.
Yeah, the devotees get their experience it as Krishna, and Krishna is adjusting their karma, not karma. It's not exactly their karma.
So a devotee would see Krishna's hand in it, personal hand, whereas an onlooker can say, gee, what bad karma you've got.
You see, what's the difference from between you? Krishna didn't protect you.
Mm.
But that's from the non-devotee's point of view.
Mm.
This is the material world, but the devotee, the real devotee, he gets impetus from everything that occurs to him. It's a push. And then we see the non-devotee part of us because we resist. And then we become humble. And then we see we need more help. Easy to preach to others, very difficult to apply. Therefore, jivati o mukti pade sadaya bhakti. Just by this one principle, blessing, Krishna's mercy, and everything that happens, one is already in the kingdom of God, practically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the kingdom of Kenya. Did Kenya get named because of the original planted film was quinoa there? Quinoa? Is that where the name comes from? No, or you don't know?
I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think? I also don't know. But I made it up on the spot. I don't think it's true. Why did they call it Kenya? Why do they call Australia Australia? Why do they call India India? What do they call you, Neil? You're not blue. What a confusing world. Okay, good night. Sorry.
Australia is called Australia because it was placed with the Tisbet Astra, isn't it?
I've heard that before, it's a good story. But I wonder if the founding father was Australia were aware of that one when they called it Australia.
And India was called India because of the cricket.
Because of the cricket.
Because, get explain that further.
Well, because somebody had to play against England. They call it India. Because it's cricket. Let's say cricket.
That's deep.
You know how it is.
But why didn't they call Kenya India then? Because they also play cricket.
Not as well, not as well.
That's true.